and actors. And we, in that building, we adjust the income depending on whether they're on a play, in a play or not, so that when they're making money, we they pay the rent, and when they're not, we adjust the rent with our Section 8 subsidy. But I am not terribly hopeful about income integration. We will continue to have the goal. We'll continue to try to locate housing and hopefully in the future manage it in the way so we get income integration. But the facts are that as long as poor people need housing in this country, Secretary Harris intends to build it. And while our goal is the income integration, our first goal is to make sure that people have safe and sanitary housing. Okay. Mostly I fell into a lot of the things like everybody else. I did all the normal things like going to public schools and to college, and then I joined the Peace Corps and spent a couple of years living in a rural area in southern Iran. As a matter of fact, I was invited to the Shah's dinner the other night, and the secretary called me, the dinner at the White House, secretary called me and said she had not been to a White House dinner yet, and how did I get invited to a White House dinner? Well, someone at the White House was very smart and knew that I had been in that first Peace Corps group that went to Iran, and they needed some Persian-speaking people at the dinner because the Shah had brought an entourage with him, all these generals who didn't speak any English. So they had them slotted around. So they went searching, and by golly, there was this assistant secretary sitting over at Hudson that spoke Persian, so I got to go to the White House dinner. After 2 years in a rural area, I was determined to live back in a city, so I ended up in graduate school with the intention of getting a master's degree and going to work for the New York Times. I stayed too long and got interested really with a bunch of urbanists at Syracuse in the urban field and ended up, because I got so far along getting a PhD, but I still wanted to be a journalist, so I wrote a letter to the New York Times and they said no, they wouldn't take me, even though I had a PhD and some publications. They would, however, they might consider me if I went to work for a small town newspaper. Well, at that point, I really wanted to live in New York, so I took a job first at the City University and then later at Teachers College and at Columbia. My career breaks, though, came because of my field and in part because I was a woman at the right time in the right place. I just happened to be a specialist in state and local government and finance at the point at which that field was really blossoming. And in 1975, when New York City was about to collapse, I literally was the only woman who was a specialist in part of the financing that was being disputed. That I was the expert on the state financing of the city. So for me, it was the fiscal crisis in New York was really an opportunity. And the governor knew me because I had helped him do the transition on the budget. And of course, I was to appoint me to the Big Mac board was good for him because he found someone that was young, that was a woman, and that was a specialist in the field. So that the job in Washington was really a combination, I think, of my own writing and the fact that I was very visible in New York. My PhD was in both economics and in political science. And I was really trained era. I was trained for the exact kinds of urban crisis problems that we're now dealing with. So that when the women's movement broke in some ways, I would argue I had the credentials. That it was simply a matter of opening up some opportunities. I just credit the women's movement with a lot of those breaks. I mean, the governor, nice guy, but most of those people wouldn't go out of their way to look for a woman. They probably would have used me as a consultant because they needed that information, but would not have bothered to make the appointment. And the universities would not. But what I really wanted to add was the beginning of the story, and that is when I was making the choice of whether to take the assistant secretary's job, I was simultaneously offered a job by the New York Times on their editorial board. It's one of my favorite stories. I still have the letter, the letter of reject, the reject letter from the New York Times. Can I answer any other questions, please? Yes. Sure. To announce New York, the New York job is about to open up. These are jobs at the GS 15 and GS 16 level, and if you think that they will not be available to women if you take the trouble of applying, I chair the Executive Resources Board that appoints those panels, and I can assure you that if we can get some women to apply for those top jobs at HUD, that they'll be seriously considered. Yes. We'll be setting our own practices. You know, one of the things about HUD is that we've got to clean up our own act before we go running around cleaning up everybody else's act. And we know we have a lot to do in that regard. Yes.
In your estimation of time to deal with the problems of the women's safety and financing of homes,
no, the fact is that the major thrust at HUD is to worry about housing for poor people. So whether it's direct home ownership or subsidies for renting, that's the major thing. We are simultaneously going to do something about women in the mortgage market as a piece of that overall strategy. Basically, HUD is committed to the more complex issue of poor people. What I'm saying is it's possible to break this piece off because there is a risk factor in poor people buying a house because their income levels vary. And because, as HUD has had experience, the problem of making sure people have enough income not simply to buy the house but for all the additional costs of the house. There's been this practice in the United States to push off on poor people the worst houses, which have all sorts of costs built into them, without substantial kinds of low-interest loans and subsidies. It's ownership, the occupancy costs of a house. I see that as a much more complex issue for poor people that has a lot more to do with their income and the kinds of homes that government is making available to them. That's more of a stable income question than simply something that can be eliminated because there are errors in fact. When you can rip off an issue, in this case, women in the credit market, that is an error in fact, where we can demonstrate with hard data there is not a risk, then we ought to go with that in one direction while we simultaneously are working on the poverty issue. Would not suggest to you at all, in fact, Mrs. Harris would hit me over the head, that our main responsibility is not poor people. Yes, ma'am.
I came in late, but I was interested when Mr. Harris
Will you send me a letter? Remind me of that point, and I'll pass it on to the people that are putting together particularly those projects. Any other questions? Yes. It's common for all Americans. I have a mother who's a lawyer who tells me, don't sign anything until you've had a lawyer read it. Because she's a neighborhood lawyer in Cleveland and people of all kinds of income groups, she's in a lower middle income neighborhood, her office, all kinds of people from different income groups come in who have signed commitments, whether it's for a home or for furniture or something else, and that's a major consumer credit issue. Esther Peterson is here, President's Assistant for Consumer Affairs, and we were talking about this this morning at breakfast. Yeah, there are a lot of things citizens groups can do in communities about those kinds of issues, depends on how your community is organized in terms of community participation. But HUD requires community participation on the distribution, for instance, of its community development money, so that there are opportunities to make sure that that money doesn't go to places is not leveraged activities that discriminate in one way or another. Our hope is that HUD will do a better job in terms of just passing out the information, whether it's counseling lower income people about the real cost of home ownership, whether it simply is distributing information about mortgage credit and hitting at those people that actually make the mortgage decisions in local banks, or whether it's encouraging, and in some cases it might be necessary to protect the savings and loan industry in their investment in deteriorating neighborhoods with some co-insurance schemes, and in some cases we'll need some very strong anti-redlining legislation. What we intend to do is to put as much emphasis on the dissemination as on the actual physical projects themselves, that we're convinced that some of it is an informational thing, and that once the information is out, then enforcement is easier for us. We think at least we can skim off the top with some of that. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, we intend to do pre-purchase counseling as well as counseling all the way through the first few years. But again, it's a budget constraint. It's just the number of people that you can counsel. I think that as long as HUD has a policy of providing opportunities to poor people to buy homes, that there are going to be defaults, that the problem there is an income problem that doesn't have as much to do with HUD making the housing available and proper counseling. Now, that suggests to me that, we need a strong incomes policy in this country, not that's worked in conjunction with a housing subsidies program. That what people need is steady incomes that they can depend on, not periods of employment and unemployment, and that we can't solve that income problem with a housing subsidy program alone, that it's got to really be worked in conjunction with the housing program. And that's why the president's welfare reform, whether you like it or not, at least to the extent that there is some coordination with the country's housing programs, we could rebuild the housing in this country and provide adequate housing for everybody that's in inadequate housing in this country. And we could do it tomorrow if we had the budget to do it. At our present rate, it'll take us 20 years to do that, as long as the numbers don't change one way or another. It is for us a budget constraint. But I would not pretend that housing can do it all. The Assistant Secretary for Housing can do that.
About the clearing certain loans being approved and by real estate agents.
That's it.
Do you feel that women loan officers
and women loan, I don't know. I don't know anyone's looked at that. I really don't know that. There are so few loan officers, there are more real estate people, but I don't know of anyone that has looked at that. And my assumption is in our second round of studies, we'll look at that. You'll never probably find a big enough sample, a cross cut on that. I don't know. That's a very interesting question, though, and I'll make sure that we're going to look at that. Do women make a difference? Yeah. Yeah. That's right. What we really have to do is get at those people that make decisions. If we can convince them that women are as good risks in a variety of income categories, I mean, they're out to make money. What we're telling them is that it's good business. Now, that's a very different kind of, it's an easier approach than when you're trying to do something about home ownership for poor people of any sex or race. The urban policy? Yes. Yes, but it'll, I would low key how large it's going to be. We're going to do it within the government in different pieces in different places. I mean, one of the things that happened last week that you'd be interested in is that the women in the administration got together to put together our own old girls network. And it's our intention within the administration to do these pieces with some kind of coordination, so that we have some impact. Some of these things don't cost a lot of money. I mean, doing women in the credit market is not going to cost my department a lot of money. I mean, it's money that's going to come out of my research budget. It's not going to, it's not no great thing that we have to go up on the Hill and argue with Congress about or with the Office of Management and Budget about.
Do you have any leverage?
Yes, and the law has allowed us to use that leverage. I had lunch the other day with the guy that's head of the building trades union, and I told him that he better be ready for trouble because the Assistant Secretary for Housing and I and the Secretary just got back from Russia, and every time we looked in a construction ditch, there was nothing but women down there. And if you ever want an example of how women can do all the jobs in the construction industry, the problem is the economy. Just at the point where you have some women in power, where we could really leverage the resources of the federal government, you have an economy, particularly the construction industry, in serious trouble. The rehab area that she deals in is a new area in which we might be able to make some breakthroughs. But we're not successful on the minority construction thing, even though people are trying to enforce it, either when the whole industry is in trouble. It is easier to have some impact when the economy is booming than when the economy is so much trouble. If the economy turns around, we'll really get all over them. Yeah. My department is on record in support. Anything else? Thank you.
On behalf of the IWI Commission, I want to thank Dr. Shalala for coming and giving us a very informative speech, for her commitment that she's made publicly. We all know about it now. And she did such a fine job, the press wants her to come right away and do a press briefing. So, Ms. Virginia Oldham's going to take it. Let's give her another hand. Will you please? Fantastic.